used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
The less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, on unceded Coast Salish territories. Today is Friday, July the 12th, 2019. I'm your host today, Allison Cole, and I'm also joined today by my co-host, Jody Pongratz from Sound Resistance. Hey, Jody, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, having me.
Yeah, and we also have our co-host Carol Davies McIntosh, who will be a silent co-host today. So the producer of this week's show, Jen, is away today. On today's show, we are talking about a few of the ways in which animals are needlessly used for human greed, namely the Calgary Stampede, as it's that time of the year again, and our food chain. So we'll have three interviews for you in this next hour. First, a politician with the Animal Protection Party, Jordan Reichardt, will be attending the Calgary Stampede in opposition to it, and we'll have him on the show to speak about that. Then local activist Bimala Spencer discusses her plant-based cooking class. And finally, we welcome back Toronto activist Marnie Jill Ugar. She'll be talking about her protests at the restaurant Bacon Nation, and that's in Toronto. So the theme of today's show basically is speciesism. We're going to be talking about that, and you know, this is a topic that you might have heard of frequently. It comes up frequently in our shows because what speciesism is sort of against what we're all against when we're fighting for animal liberation and for liberation of all different species. So as I mentioned, we've talked about this many times on the show before, but Jody, quick pop quiz. Do you have like a definition that you would, I'm just asking because a lot of people don't know what it is, so that's why we're having a little lesson today.
Great.
Would you be able to articulate from being just put on the spot here, what is speciesism?
I mean, off the top of my head, I would just say it's favoring one type of animal over another.
That's pretty much it. And I would add to that only solely because of that they are a member of that species and not another. So you're favoring and you're perhaps giving better treatment to one species over another only because of those species, and that's what speciesism is.
It's a tongue twister.
A little bit of a tongue twister, yes. So when might we show that preference? Well, I know lately we've, in the news and that happening on the other side of the world, we just had the Yulin Chinese Dog Festival. It was over the course of 10 days at the end of June where they killed 10 to 15,000 dogs in the name of celebration, and they eat those dogs. And a lot of these dogs are people's pets. They are actually stolen from the guardians, and then they're also street dogs, and then they also breed dogs as well just to sell at this huge festival. We also have the South Korean dog trade, which we've discussed about on the show before, and this is a horrible thing. So we here in the West, activists will bring up these issues that are happening in Asia, but it also, if you look a little bit further into it, you can see how it can shed a spotlight over, okay, so all these omnivores here in North America and Canada are horrified that we're eating pet dogs, right? We're companion animal dogs. However, you know, what about your companion animal pig? I know actually a lot of people have companion animal pigs. It's really no different. So, and also another way you might see speciesism being displayed in town in Vancouver is we have these wonderful bus ads that Vancouver Humane Society has been putting on for years now. And I know, Jody, you're in a bus ad, but it's not this one. It's the one, Jody can be found on the side. You get up the big space, so a lot of real estate on the buses. But, and I'm not kidding, but on the back of the buses, when you're parked, when you're driving behind a bus, you mm-hmm. might see this big poster on there that says, it shows the picture of a cute little puppy mm-hmm. next to the most adorable little piglet. And the caption is, why love one but not the other?
Yeah.
Right? So
how touching. That's like going to hit home for a lot of people, because cute animals, they hit home.
Yes, but you know, we have to respect all animals. Like, I'm not a cute animal, but I hope people respect me.
Absolutely, I can get behind that too. I mean, also right now the whale. I don't know, the whale hunt is happening in Japan.
Japan
too.
They've reopened the commercial whaling system. We'll get into that on another show, because there's actually Paul Watson has actually issued a statement on that saying it's actually a good thing, but I'll tell you why on another show.
Ooh, I'll tune into that.
Yeah, but just to speak more about speciesism, I mm-hmm. want to just read some wonderful quotes. When I knew I was tasked to speak about this early this morning, I grabbed my handbook. It is called, a book by Dr. Melanie Joy. It is called Why We Love Dogs, Eat Pigs, and Wear Cows. And the subtitle is, it's an introduction to carnism, which is the belief system that enables us to eat some animals and not others. So we don't have a lot of time here, but she's got some great nuggets in here that I'll share. So she says, how we feel about an animal and how we treat it, it turns out, has much less to do with what kind of animal it is about what our perception of it is. We believe it's appropriate to eat cows, but that's here in North America, but not dogs. So we perceive cows as edible and dogs as inedible and act accordingly. And this process is cyclical. Not only do our beliefs ultimately lead to our actions, but our actions also reinforce our beliefs. The more we don't eat dogs and do eat cows, the more we reinforce the beliefs that dogs are inedible and cows are edible. So she has this little chart where she sort of describes the cycle of what goes on in a typical human's brain here in North America. Mm-hmm. So say your stimulus is golden retriever meat, which is what she uses as an example. And you know, it's pretty,
I cringe my nose.
Yeah, but you know what? It's happening right now in South Korea and just happened in Yulin. So that's a stimulus that often, it drives our brain to believe immediately this is an inedible animal. That's mm-hmm. our belief and perception. That drives us to thinking of an image of a living dog who we all love and know. We've known many dogs in our lives. And mm-hmm. and then that brings us to think, that's disgusting. The thing, mm-hmm. the thought of eating that animal who we know, right? Mm-hmm. And then that brings us to thinking, well, we are refusing or we have a reluctance to eat this type of animal. And that's sort of how speciesism works. But if you think about it with other animals, you know, like in France, they eat horses, but we sort mm-hmm. of have the same disgust here as they would not in France. In France, horses are deemed to be regular animals. My mom, Peruvian, grew up eating guinea pigs.
I was just going to bring that up.
When she sees a guinea pig, she actually licks her lips. So yeah. I might have mentioned that before. And my sister and I are horrified. Yeah. Right?
They definitely make better pets. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Well, that cycle. Well, they keep them around their house. I saw this on a TV show. They keep them around their house, like walking around the kitchen and the living room. But then when dinner time comes, they pick one up and decide to eat the poor little guinea pig. Oh. So that's our primer to species. And that's all we have for now, but mm-hmm. I just want to suggest as well, is if you want to learn more about speciesism, please check out the films Earthlings, which is free on YouTube, and Speciesism the Movie, which is also free online. I'm not sure where, but I will look that up. And we've also had an interview with the filmmaker of Speciesism. You can find that on our website, animalvoices.org. So on to our first interview, Jordan Reichart, Vancouver Island activist and West Coast campaign officer for the Animal Protection Party of Canada, will be attending this year's Calgary Stampede to show opposition to the archaic and senseless animal cruelty, as well as to inform the public that this kind of entertainment is unnecessary and needs to be banned. The Animal Protection Party of Canada, formerly Animal Alliance Environment Voters, is dedicated to raising awareness and improving the status of non-humans across Canada, because these issues matter to Canadians. Our co-host Jen interviewed Jordan about this. Let's hear that interview now.
Welcome to the show, Jordan. Tell us about the Animal Protection Party of Canada and your role within it.
Yeah, hi, Jen. Thanks so much for having us. So I'm the West Coast Campaign Officer for the Animal Protection Party of Canada. We are Canada's only registered federal party that represents the interests of animals, people, and the environment. So people often think that we're just about animals, certainly we are a completely vegan, animal rights, animal liberation-focused party, and we, imbue everything that we do in our policy and platform with those values. So that's a really important part of our identity that we are unapologetic about. But of course, we also care about social justice issues and environmental issues, and nobody is left behind when it comes to our policy or platform. But we just want to make sure that animals are enmeshed in our public policy so that they're not left behind as they have been for basically the entire history of Canada and 150 years.
I think that's fantastic. And I'm having you on the show today because the Animal Protection Party of Canada is the only federal party who will be standing with the protesters at this year's Calgary Stampede, which is really exciting. Today we're doing a show to educate the public about the Stampede. And so on July the 6th, you and your colleague Liz White will be outside the Stampede to oppose this cruel event where animals are brutalized and killed every year in the name of entertainment. Can you tell us about some of the events that take place at the Stampede for those who don't know?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's a broad number of events, but some of the ones that have been called out for the greatest degree of cruelty are things like calf roping. So, you take a 3 to 4 month old calf and you get them to, you kind of harass them to get them to shoot out of a suit, and then cowboy chases after them on the horseback and lassoes them by the neck and pulls them down very hard. You often see images of this when you look for Calgary Stampede cruelty or just rodeo cruelty in general, because it's one of the most kind of distressing events when people witness it in terms of the violence towards the basically a child. So that's one of them. The cowboy then picks the animal up and throws them to the ground and ties up their feet. It's pretty horrendous. In terms of the sheer number of deaths, so in the past 30 years, over 60 animal horses have died in the chuck wagon races that they do. It's called the half mile to hell, actually, often because of how ridiculously dangerous it is for the animals involved, and even the riders as well. Can be injured, of course, when there's these horrific accidents with dozens of horses all around and the chuck wagons themselves. These types of things are inherently distressing and dangerous to animals, but nobody's taking a hard stand on this, not the Calgary Humane Society or otherwise. It's kind of always just protected under this cultural practice or under the idea that, it's standard industry practice in some ways as a form of entertainment. Steer wrestling as well is a brutal practice. The rider jumps off onto the steer's neck as they run out of the chute and twists their neck to try to bring them to the ground, and some steers have died because of that, having their necks broken. There's the bucking events, of course, which are infamously associated with rodeo, and the flank straps that they put around the bull's undercarriage, like stomach and such, to get them to kick and irritate them and get them to react in a way that, of course, they wouldn't react unless they were being put in this distressful situation. So what we see is basically, fear and pain and intimidation and violence used to conduct these events and get the animals to react a certain way. And it's disgraceful. It should be Canada's disgrace, I think, that it's often held up as one of the biggest rodeos in the world, I believe. And, it's not something that anyone should be supporting, especially not political parties.
Well, in my research for this interview today, I don't like to have to do things like this, but I was looking up the YouTube videos from past events, and you know, you're just talking about the steer wrestling, and can you imagine a cowboy falling off of a horse, which is much higher up than these small steers, and landing on their necks, and then basically putting them into an arm wrestle and cranking their necks? And if they don't, I was looking at the rules for this sport. It's funny that it's called a sport, but if the animal's legs are splayed, they lose points. But there's no punishment as far as the cruelty to the animals. They simply lose points, or they're disqualified from the event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no accountability to if an animal suffers or dies during the event. The animals are not; they have no protections. Nobody's going to be charged over those kinds of things. And even I believe a cowboy was once charged for whipping a horse, but there was no actual penalties levied against the cowboy at the end.
Have you reached out to the Calgary Humane Society as far as why they've never opposed this event? It seems in opposition to their own stated ethics.
Yeah, I mean, if you look on their website, I haven't reached out to them directly myself, but on their website, it does, they talk about distress and that they do not support any events, including those that are for entertainment that cause animals distress and such. And we haven't seen, there's not a response from them to go after this cruelty that's taking place publicly, that's publicly broadcast across the country and the world. And it's a major concern. But of course, this is the fundamental problem that we have across Canada, whether it's in BC or whether it's in Alberta or Ontario, et cetera, the organizations that are charged with protecting animals are also charities and are kind of beholden to their funders, which are the private citizens, not the government, to enforce these laws. And there's something, it's the fox guarding the hen house. It's injustice to say that, humans are protected under these laws, and the systems will be, let's say, relatively accountable and transparent about how the laws are applied, but the laws protecting animals will not be applied in the same way. And it's a concern across the country that must be addressed.
Yeah, basically it's just speciesism, which is what we here on the Animal Voices show are always trying to raise awareness about, and of course you are with your party. I think that's fantastic. I'm so grateful that you're in the role that you are. And now let's talk about you and Liz's plans to attend the event, such as where you plan to be and how you'll be getting your message across without being removed from the event. Do you know what that will look like?
Yeah, so I mean, we're really excited to be there. So every year, the Calgary Stampede hosts like pancake breakfast and those types of events. So the local vegan activist community is actually holding their own vegan pancake breakfast outside of the event. And so that's first of all, we're going to be there. We're supporting them financially, and we're making sure that that's a success for them. And we're going to volunteer there as well. And then we're going to go be on the front lines with fellow activists who will be outside the rodeo, demonstrating, trying to raise awareness of the cruelty inherent in the Calgary Stampede. And, we'll also be looking, and we've put out a media release calling out the other political parties for their participation in this event. Of course, Andrew Scheer will be there. Justin Trudeau has always been there, or has been there for the past several years. Elizabeth May of the Green Party, she's actually going to, if you look at the events on the Green Party page, there's an event saying Elizabeth May attends the Calgary Stampede, and the next day on the Saturday, there's a Stampede brunch that the Green Party's putting on. So, they're complicit in this when they cross that line and go into the Stampede. It doesn't matter if they're sitting and viewing the actual rodeo or not. It's their participation in it, and it's their lack of criticism of the cruelty and spectacle of animal abuse that's taking place there that they have to be held accountable for.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
We don't know yet if Jagmeet Singh is going to be there, but I would suspect that that he would be, mainstream party politics go. I can't say for sure yet.
Yeah. Well, what can the concerned public do to help end this archaic animal cruelty, Jordan?
Yeah, so So, you know, it's really tough because it's such a huge event. It's massive in terms of the draw that it has for the local economy and the branding that goes into it and such. So I think a more concerted effort needs to be made to try to go after the economics of the Calgary Stampedes, going after sponsors. So doing whatever we can to effectively, you know, publicly shame the sponsors for endorsing this and supporting the purses that go to the rodeo contestants who are abusing animals, who are participating in animal cruelty publicly. So, you know, whether it's the CBC for televising it, whether it's, you know, Bell Canada, Coca-Cola, BMO, McDonald's, all these people are sponsors of the Calgary Stampede, and they need to be called out, of course, and the images that we see of animals being abused need to be associated with those brands as people who support them. So so that's a major, the economic kind of perspective is something that we need to address. And then I think that we have to make sure that we continue to have a presence there, whether that's inside or outside. I know people have done some much more direct action stuff on the inside, and I completely support that. And then on the outside, there needs to be a strong message. But we have to call out our politicians as well. And you know, we have an election coming up this year, and at every debate where one of the leaders of the party is, or any of the candidates are from any of the mainstream parties, somebody, if you have the opportunity, you should ask them, why do you support animal exploitation and cruelty at the Calgary Stampede by having your party leader participate and go rub shoulders at these kinds of events? And that'll hold them accountable, and they'll have to start looking at, do we want to keep attending these events because it's giving us a really bad name in terms of our representation on animal issues?
You've inspired me to find the list of sponsors and all of the politicians who'll be attending, and I will be publicly shaming them and calling them out and asking them to explain themselves on their Facebook pages. So thank you very much for that.
Well, thank you, Jen.
And we will post that information on Animal Voices Vancouver Facebook, as well as animalvoices.org. You can find those lists. And just before we wrap up here, Jordan, where can our listeners find out some more information about the work that you and Liz are doing?
Yeah, well, right now we're on tour across Canada, but you can go to animalprotectionparty.ca is our website. If you can find it on Facebook, Instagram, you'll see what we're doing and the issues that we're talking about. And, of course, you know, we encourage people to get involved politically for the animals, for social justice, for the environment. We're the only party that's really going to push the narrative where it needs to go on all these issues. And we're looking for candidates, so please get involved and reach out to us.
It's fantastic. Thank you so much for all that you're doing, and I look forward to some live video from the event.
Yeah, me too.
Okay.
Thanks, Jim.
Good luck with the hillbillies.
I will. I'll give them hell.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye, Jordan.
What this all boils down to is speciesism, a form of discrimination based on species membership. It involves treating members of one species as morally more important than members of other species, even when their interests are equivalent. More precisely, speciesism is the failure to consider interests of equal strength to an equal extent because of the species of which the individuals are a member. Our next interview focuses on species within our food chain. Let's listen to that now.
Today I'm speaking with an activist from Toronto who's a dear Facebook friend of mine, but we have yet to meet in person. She's been on our show before in regards to her activism against restaurants who serve up the bodies of animals and mock the activists who defend them. Marnie Jill Ugar, thank you for being on the show again today.
Thank you for having me.
Can you tell us about the name of your organization?
Sure, it's Grass Toronto, and that stands for Grassroots Anti Speciesism Shift. It's the acronym, all capital letters, GRASS Toronto.
Right. And so you target restaurants, basically, or do you do more public outreach campaigns? Tell us about what you guys do.
So it's mostly restaurants at this point. I mean, we've done things like dairy outreach, but it's primarily restaurants, correct?
Okay.
And the reason, so just to expand on that, The reason that we go to these restaurants is our goal is to, of course, raise awareness about speciesism, as that's what GRASP stands for, but also to change social norms. Right now, the norm is to serve animal flesh. I mean, that's what almost all restaurants serve. We have more and more vegan in Toronto, but it's still primarily non-vegan restaurants, and that's actually considered the norm. And although many people get mad at us seeing the restaurant owners as our victims because we target them, we do understand that anger is still better than apathy in this case.
Well, I'm glad you're doing what you're doing, and you actually caught my attention on Facebook, I think, a couple of days ago. Some activists were outside a restaurant in Toronto called Bacon Nation, and they were playing a very loud recording of pigs screaming, which I know to be the sound of pigs at slaughterhouses. I've heard that before, and I've seen the images myself. Tell me about how you found out about that restaurant and decided to make that one of the targets.
Sure. So one day I saw one of their trucks, and it said Pork Star on it. So, of course, that caught my attention. And it also says, go pig or go home. And then I noticed it said Bacon Nation. So I looked them up, and I found out that they do have a fleet of food trucks, but that they had recently opened a restaurant in Kensington Market, which is one of Toronto's busiest areas, and that they have a patio. So we decided when it was patio season that we would start going there.
And so how was it received the day that you showed up and you were playing that audio track? I mean, you can't ignore that, right?
You can't ignore that, exactly. I mean, we show them photos of pigs on route to slaughter. Some I've taken myself. Some are from Jenny McQueen. She has been in a pig farm, and some are the, you know, photos that she's taken, but they can ignore that. They don't have to look at our photos. However, when they hear the pigs screaming and crying, they can't ignore that. And the owner was on the patio, and staff and some customers, and everybody looked visibly distraught and shaken. And in fact, one customer went and thought it was just too much for him. And so then their food, quote unquote, becomes a who, not an it.
Good. I think that's great, because these people are probably generally just being quite mindless about what they're consuming, and you're changing that for them.
Well, of course, as you know, everybody wants to think, you crazy vegans, mm-hmm. but everything changes when they're forced to connect to the reality. It makes it a lot harder for them.
Right. And so if our activists who are inspired by what you're doing today want to contact this business, I have noticed that they do have a Facebook page, Bacon Nation. I have actually contacted them as well to get their opinion on what you're doing and to give their side of the story. And we will keep you posted on that. I am hoping to get them on the show, and perhaps we can have you on that same show and have a bit of a polite debate about the use of animals. And you never know, there are restaurant owners that once served animal flesh that changed and went fully vegan after learning the truth about how it's created.
Well, that's exactly it. We're always open to dialogue, and we love working with restaurant owners to inspire change. So absolutely.
Well, keep up the good work, Marnie. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much, Jen. Take care.
Bye-bye.
On Saturday, July 6th at 2 p.m., join us for Unsettled Phase 2 workshop sharing at KW Studios, located at 111 West Hastings Street. This free event includes artists Carolyn Hebert, Steve Litton, Kat Norris, Caitlin Pedersen, Sandra Pronto, and Julia Sedlanowska. Unsettled is an intergenerational, multi-arts theater project created with and performed by community artists who live with and experience disabilities. The presentational style blends poetry, narrative, song, stylized gesture, movement, live drumming, and ASL interpretation. Again, that's Unsettled, the Phase 2 workshop sharing, Saturday, July 6th at 2 p.m. at KW Studios at 111 West Hastings.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio, broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
Yeah. as we've been hearing on today's show, thankfully we have dedicated activists who challenge speciesism when they see it. And up next, we have an interview between our co-host Jen and a local activist who is fighting speciesism by teaching people how to cook delicious vegan food. Let's listen to that interview now.
On today's show, we're speaking with New Westminster-based Bimala Spencer. Welcome to the show, Bimala.
Thank you, Jen.
So I've only met you once or twice, but you and I are mostly connected through Facebook, of course, as all of us vegan activists are. And I've been really inspired by your posts lately. You've been putting on some vegan cooking classes for people who are not yet vegan. And of course, I have people that I want to be learning how to cook vegan who happen to live in New West, and I've been pushing them to take your classes. So let's start off with your vegan journey. How long have you been vegan, and what was your story?
Well, I've been a vegan for almost 4 years, and I was a vegetarian prior to that for the first 47 years of my life. My journey was that I started to learn about veganism probably about, 20, 25 years ago. I came across John Robbins' Diet for a New America, and I started reading it. I was at a retreat center in Port Townsend, Washington, and it was a center where one went for healing and time away, and it was the woman who ran it provided raw vegan food, which was delicious, and it was so incredibly healing to my body. After I finished with her for a weekend, I just felt transformed, and I had so much energy. And I came home thinking, okay, we're going to do this. And, you know, we couldn't give up the cheese and the ice cream, which were basically our main hang-ups. And so for all those years, I avoided reading further or looking at the documentaries because I didn't want to face the reality and the cruelty of the dairy and the egg industry. And that's one of my biggest regrets in my life, is that I waited so long. And then about 4 years ago, we were at a meetup at plant-based natural foods, David Isabister's gathering, and Chris and I were sitting at a table with a number of young, passionate activists. And of course, as always happens at these gatherings, everybody starts talking about, you know, how long have you been vegan and what they've been up to lately. And so these young people asked us, and we said, well, we're mostly vegan. We don't, you know, we're hung up on cheese and ice cream. And they were very sweet and gentle. And they said, well, have you watched Earthlings? Have you watched Cowspiracy? And we said, no, we've been avoiding it. And, you know, and they just talked to us about how absolutely cruel it is. And that night we came home, and that was it. We were done. We decided there was no way in good conscience we could continue contributing to this, and we wanted no part of it. And so overnight we went vegan, and we've never looked back. And what's surprising is that within a month of our going vegan, that same month, one of our daughters was up at Quest University in Squamish, and our other daughter lives in Ottawa with her husband. And within that same month, without actually stating to anybody that this is what we had decided to do, we all ended up going vegan separately. And our daughters, who are now 29 and 26, were raised vegetarian and have never had meat in their lives. And all of us are just so much happier and peaceful and glad that we've made this decision finally.
That's great. And so you went home from that dinner being told about the documentaries that you were avoiding, because obviously you knew that there was cruelty in the dairy and egg industry, but you didn't even watch the documentaries. You just decided, hey, we know, and we're just not going to support it.
Yeah. Yeah. We still can't bring now more to witness those poor animals' journeys, and because I feel so guilty and responsible for having contributed to it for so many decades when I should have known better, I've watched some of them, and also because I'm trying to help other people move to a plant-based lifestyle, I figure I owe it to them to know what's on those. So I've watched What the Health, and I've watched Cowspiracy, but it's so heartbreaking. It's absolutely devastating to really see it. And it doesn't work to keep our heads buried, because whether we watch it or not, it's happening every single day live to these sweet, sweet sentient beings. And none of us could possibly do this ourselves. So why pay somebody to do this?
And, you know, before I went vegan, it was about 5 years ago, I was one of those people spending extra money on the so-called humane certified free-range organic products, including the eggs and the dairy. So, and then I learned the truth, that the same processes happened to those animals, and basically I was being scammed. What would you want to say to people who are at that point in their journey, and they're not believing that there's any cruelty involved in what they're supporting, the vegetarians that are buying the free-range eggs and the Avalon dairy milk?
There's no humane way to exploit another. There's no humane way to kill someone who does not want to die. You know, it's all over Facebook. It's everywhere. You cannot escape the reality of the cruelty in the so-called humane enterprises, these farms that are supposed to be looking after the animals. That's just crap. It doesn't exist. We've seen undercover videos and activists going into these places that consider themselves humane, and it's so evident. The news is broadcasting it. There's no escaping the reality that it doesn't exist. And when you look at the documentaries or any kind of footage, I mean, don't even watch a documentary, just open your eyes to the footage that's out there, that's live footage that people are taking. It's just so evident that the cows are devastated. You know, they don't want to go onto the kill floor. They're doing anything they can to back away. Those poor baby male calves that are stolen from their mothers, and the mothers are chasing the carts and the wagons. It's devastating. It breaks my heart. I want to bawl my eyes out whenever I even see a little clip, because that's their reality. And my mother, who's been a vegetarian her 70-some-odd years, had said to me some time ago that they were traveling, and she was near a farm, and she could hear the mother cows bawling and just going on for days. And I thought, and mother, how could you possibly continue consuming dairy? She said it was so hard to hear their cries. And people just refuse to make that connection. Mm-hmm. You know, like the disconnect is so intense that you have to actually override a lot in your brain to be able to say, okay, I'm going to continue, you know, consuming dairy. Having heard that, I've never heard it. I wish I had heard it, because I think, you know, being in that environment, I would have made that choice much sooner.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you did, and thank you. And so tell me about that. What inspired you to start giving these cooking classes?
Well, I love cooking, and I really love eating, too. So I'm constantly looking for new recipes. Ever since becoming vegan, like, food has never tasted so good, and because I love experimenting with things in the kitchen, I have so enjoyed this. I've been having a blast, and there are gourmet chefs out there who make recipes that are just incredible. So, you know, I always, whenever I find something new that's interesting to me, I love to go and get every library book I can find, and I'll be online for hours at a time just looking at stuff and finding things that appeal to me and then trying them out. And so I've always enjoyed having with our girls around, we've always enjoyed having games nights and having their friends over and getting together with tons of food. I love feeding people. And so a few months ago, I had heard about these small neighborhood grants through the Vancouver Foundation and Family Services of Greater Vancouver. And days before the grant application was closing, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to put it out there and say, I would like to teach free plant-based cooking classes to folks in New Westminster and see what happens. And I talked about the impact on the animals, the cruelty to the animals, the impact on our environment, and also the impact to our health to not be eating a plant-based diet. And I was really quite open, and I just put it out there. I thought, I've got nothing to lose. And lo and behold, they granted me $500, which covers the cost of groceries. And my initial vision was that I would host 5 classes and have 10 people at a time in my small little condo kitchen. And so that was my idea. And what happened was we set up a Facebook page, and within the first 24 hours, we had 100 members in our tiny little community of New West. And all I did was put it out there on a couple of other local Facebook pages that I belong to. The response was overwhelming. We asked people, what interests you about this? And the answers were, well, I have young children. I want to leave them a better world. I'm worried about the environment. I want to do this for my health. I'm concerned about the cruelty to the animals. I want to expand my repertoire. Most of these people were not vegetarian, let alone vegan. And I thought, this is amazing. Like, I did not expect that kind of response. I thought I was just going to get people participating through word of mouth and build excitement that way. So then within a couple weeks after that, I had posted our first event. And actually, what happened was I had connected with somebody that I know at the school district who has access to a lovely kitchen, which would fit far more than 10 people. Because once the Facebook page was this popular and people were like, yeah, I want to come, please let me know when it is, I thought, there's no way I can accommodate that many people in my space. So this lovely fellow from the community school said, yes, absolutely, you're welcome to use our kitchen. The one caveat is that I want to be able to attend your class. And I was like, you'll be my VIP guest. I would love to have you here. And please, by all means, come. And he's part of the school-based lunch program, meal program, and wants to move more toward plant-based delivery. So he was super excited about this. And so we secured the space. I put it on Eventbrite. And I think within a few hours, Jen, all 25 seats were full. And we had a wait list of 13.
Wow.
And I thought, yeah. I was like, okay, I guess we're rolling here. And so I let everybody in on the wait list and just kept, you know, allowing everybody just to sign up because I didn't want to lose the momentum. It was so inspiring to see this many people excited. And so then we started posting recipes and ideas on the Facebook page, and people started to make them. This was even before the event. And then people started posting their own recipes and saying, I tried this and I love it. And then the night of the first class came and 30 people showed up. And we had made a number of homemade cheeses because, of course, cheese ends up being something that many, many people say they have a hard time giving up. So I thought, okay, let's show them how easy it is to make, quote unquote, mozzarella cheese that's meltable. So we did some really easy recipes. We made a pita bread pizza using pita bread as the crust and having beautiful a variety of toppings, you know, artichoke hearts, sun-dried tomatoes and olives and this meltable mozzarella. I had 3 different kinds of mozzarella I'd made, sunflower seeds and with cashews. And everybody loved it. And we had roasted red pepper pasta and peanut peanut butter Rice Krispies with chocolate was our dessert, and a date fudge bar that has been just incredible. And seriously, that date fudge bar takes 5 minutes to make, and there's nothing harmful in it. And it's so fantastic that people have been making it constantly off the Facebook page and taking it to potlucks and serving it to their friends for dessert. And it's taken off, and people have tried those recipes when they've gone home and been giving feedback. And the people who can't attend the class look forward to the recipes being shared on the Facebook page. Yeah. Wow,
that's great. So for our listeners that are inspired, what is the name of the Facebook page and how can they get involved?
So they are welcome to sign up. It's called New West Plant-Based Cooking Club.
Great.
On Facebook.
And when is your next event?
Our next event is sometime in September, and we will post it. I will announce it once I have the dates from the school in terms of availability. It'll be a weeknight. And we're moving to a model more of cooking together. So what we've been doing for the last two classes has been, I have a little volunteer crew, and we've been gathering in my condo and cooking the bulk stuff together one or two nights before the event, and then demoing at the event how we made what we are bringing. But that's been a ton of work and a lot of hours. So what we've decided as a larger collective, including the participants in the last class, was that we would actually gather at the community kitchen and cook together the bulk food and then serve it. And whoever isn't able to come for the prep part of it will help clean up the kitchen after, which I think was a really reasonable way to do it.
That's a good deal.
Yeah.
Put on some great tunes and get doing those dishes.
Yeah. Yeah. And this has had such a wonderful uptake that the Vancouver Foundation and Family Services of Greater Vancouver said to me, this has been the best response we've ever had of any project that's been proposed.
I just got goosebumps. And that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're super excited. And what's happened is they've granted me a second $500 now.
Whoa.
Because we've fed over, we've made food for almost 80 people, and we fed in person over 60 people, which surpassed my original proposal. And then all the leftovers go home with participants, because of course we don't want it to go to waste, and people are so excited they bring their containers to take it home. And it's great because then they report back on the Facebook page, I'm so stuffed and I've got, you know, great leftovers for lunch or dinner, and they're telling their friends, and their friends are signing up, and they're bringing their colleagues, and, you know, people who run community kitchens have been coming to get ideas. At both classes, we taught them how to make, how to grow their own mung bean sprouts, which are so easy, and it's like pennies on the dollar. People often will say, oh, being vegan is so expensive. It's not. It is so not expensive. It can be done very affordably, and at the class, I talk about where I find the best deals, you know, what stores I go to, where you can buy the spices, where you can buy bulk nuts. There's just a few basic things you need to set up a plant-based pantry, and then you can just go for it.
Well, most people's kitchens are full of plant-based foods already. I'm always surprised when anybody says that veganism is expensive, and I immediately say to them, when I was in college, I was vegan by default because I couldn't afford cheese and meat and fish and eggs. I wasn't doing it for animal rights reasons or health reasons. I would have loved to have had those things back then. And I said, when you go to the grocery store, what are the most expensive things in your basket? And they admit it, the cheese and the meat and the milk. And I say, well, what are the least expensive things in the grocery store? And they go, well, the vegetables and the fruits. And I said, yes, and the beans and the grains, right? I just don't understand why people think this. Of course, the specialty products for vegans can be pricey if you want the imitation meats and all that, but that's junk food anyway, and that's transitional, I say. You shouldn't be having that in your regular menu, and that if it helps you save a chicken to buy some plant-based chicken, fantastic, I support it. But of course, yes, it is going to be a bit more expensive, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. For those listeners that can't wait till September, I just want to let everybody know that on the Facebook page, Bimala has been posting a ton of recipes, and I'm sure you'll continue to do so throughout the summer. So you don't have to wait for the class in September, and if you can't get out to New West, that's an alternative for you as well, correct?
Absolutely.
And are you giving the vegan messaging a little bit during these classes? Are you talking about what happens to male chicks in the egg industry and what happens to the mothers of the dairy industry and their babies and everything?
Yeah, there is some discussion about that. There isn't a lot because people just seem really scared of that messaging. And I think it draws out their guilt and what they know they need to do better. And so it just triggers them. And what I found interesting is this last class, we actually brought some leaflets that you had given to me some time ago that are from Pizza, the vegan starter kit. And so I held it up and I said, you know, this has some really wonderful menu ideas and some recipes. And also, of course, it talks about the dairy and the egg industry. And people took them and they were really happy to take them. So, so we're getting the message out that way. You know, in gentle format, members have asked that we don't post anything graphic on the Facebook page. So I'm not. I'm respecting that. And it's really very food-focused.
Okay.
And I invite people to add me if they want to as a Facebook friend, because on my page I share a lot of that stuff. And I warn them that my page is more explicit because I consider myself an animal activist and I'm not going to censor what I post on my own Facebook page. And what I found remarkably, Jen, is that people who came to our class both the first and the second time have very clearly said, look, I eat meat. I'm not even a vegetarian, but I'm really interested in learning more and incorporating this into how I live. And people are actually making drastic changes. I think that they didn't expect to be making because they're seeing how incredibly delicious the food is. They're getting that feeling of I'm contributing to a better world and a better environment and I'm not being cruel to animals. So I think they get it. They just need a leg up to see that they're not going to starve, you know, that they're going to eat really, really well, really tasty, delicious food.
Great. Well, I'm really appreciative of what you're doing, and I love that you are handing out those leaflets. And maybe one day I can come and check out your course and do some filming for the Animal Voices show.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, keep up the good work, and we will be in touch soon.
Thanks, Jen.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, those were three really enjoyable and informative interviews that our producer and co-host Jen presented today. And where she is right now, I hope she was able to hear that. Thank you for all that information, Jen. And just speaking about, well, I'll get to the last interview last, but to speak about a little bit about the interview with Jordan Reichhardt about the Calgary Stampede, we just want to remind you that if you would like to contact rodeo sponsors to express your disappointment with the Stampede, because it is such a cruel and archaic event that happens every year. And you know what? We are, because of public pressure, we are making some strides in the world here. And we've covered those, I guess those improvements on past shows. If you want to look up animalvoices.org and just type in rodeos there. But if you would like to contact rodeo sponsors, go onto our website now, animalvoices.org. And in the web post for this today's show, there is a link there that takes you to the sponsor page for the Calgary Stampede, and you can decide who you want to contact. There's also an easy link that you can follow on our Facebook page, which was posted by the Vancouver Humane Society this week. They have, they always have a campaign against the rodeo, and they have a quick petition on there where you can ask the Canadian Veterinarian Medical Association to take a stand against rodeo cruelty. So moving on, we had Marnie's amazing interview. If you remember, I interviewed her on a show that was all about Toronto when just after I had been there a couple months ago, and I had met her, and she's an amazing activist, and we've been online friends since then, and I'm seeing all the great work that she's doing. And Marnie is she's just a wonderful person. Add her on your Facebook, she'll probably accept your friendship. That was Marnie Ugar and Grass Toronto as well, if you want to check that out on Facebook. And thank you to Marnie for just being so resilient along with your fellow animal activists there in Toronto, because you know what, it can't, sometimes you might think it's kind of not, well, can be kind of challenging to put yourself out there on the street and to be chanting outside of restaurants or so-called ethical butchers who very blatantly put out the message there that they want to kill animals. They're not even trying to hide that fact that baking, that's basically all what they're about. And Marnie and her comrades are speaking out on this. Finally, regarding Bimala, Bimala is a friend of mine too. So I have just joined Bimala's group, New West, New West Plant-Based Cooking Club. It's online. I received an invitation for that a while ago, but I thought that because I don't live in New West, I wouldn't qualify. But after listening to today's interview, I just couldn't help myself. So I accepted that request because I want to see Bimala's recipe for her date fudge bars and see if they have photos from their pita pizzas with homemade non-dairy cheeses. It sounds like an exciting, very exciting group to be a part of. So we also have a big announcement today, and Carol, I don't know if you want to put your mic on about this, but you have a big announcement, or maybe I'll announce it. So Carol has just gotten a big promotion today. Do you want to tell us what for? You're not on the air. Despite that, do you want to tell us what your promotion's for?
My promotion is for, I just passed my operator's test here. So.
Right, but just make sure the mic is on when you talk next.
Just make sure the mic is on when I talk, because I don't usually talk when I'm in here.
Right, well, congratulations. I'm very proud of you. I've been working with you so long since, it's been months and months now.
It has.
Finally, and Carol's been doing a great job today. It's been particularly flawless, so thank you so much for that, Carol. You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show today on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Please join us for next week's show on Friday, July the 12th. Now, I will be producing that show, but I'm still waiting to hear back from some people, and so that's going to be a surprise, but you'll start seeing it in our social media this weekend or next Monday about what will be on the show. So speaking of social media, please join us on our Facebook at Animal Voices Vancouver. Also, we have Instagram now, so that's another way that you can connect with us, and the Instagram handle is the same. It's at Animal Voices Vancouver, and I posted a photo of us doing the show today on our Instagram and on our Facebook today if you want to check that out. And also we ask you to keep connected with us on our website as well, because if you want to hear all the past shows, all the archives, because you're not available to listen live, that's okay. I always direct people to go to animalvoices.org, and you can listen to all of our archive shows back there. So to close the show, we'll be playing the song Chains and Things by B.B. King. Stay tuned now for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals. Thank you.
crazy dreams. Oh, nothing is going right this morning. The whole world is wrong.